The weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity. But understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. Heavy rainfall poured over central Illinois in mid-August this year. A ring of fire fueled multiple rounds of thunderstorms across the state.
Parts of central Illinois have seen more than 10 inches of rainfall in just the past 2 days. And tonight, emergency responders were seen searching floodwaters in what is known as Big Ditch, just south of Dewey in Champaign County.
Areas near Interstate 74 received massive amounts of rain over 3 days, between 3 and 6 inches, with other places getting dangerous downpours of 8 to 12 inches. Champaign County faced wall-to-wall flash flooding with one flood-related fatality. Joining us to discuss why Illinois is experiencing widespread flooding is Dr. Deanna Hentz, Associate Professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. Deanna, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this idea of a ring of fire, you know, we've heard it from Johnny Cash. We've heard it about volcanoes and earthquakes in the Pacific. But what does it have to do with the Midwest and thunderstorms? And why does it produce these repeat thunderstorms over the same area?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And I just love that imagery because this idea of a ring of fire is so evocative, right? And I think a lot of us learn about it the most and with respect to the Pacific Rim and all the volcanoes and earthquakes that happen around that region due to the tectonic plate boundaries that circle the Pacific Ocean. But in our case, in the atmosphere, what we're more talking about are the really stormy boundaries around what is known as a heat dome. And so we have been seeing a lot about this in the news, where you have this high pressure system that just parks itself over a particular spot. Well, the jet stream is essentially kind of arcing its way around that big dome of hot air, which we know as a ridge in meteorology, high pressure system, goes by a lot of different names. Well, that boundary is just really, really volatile. There's a lot of action that can happen there that can help fire off thunderstorms. And so the other thing that's around that edge is that you basically have a place where that hot and frequently very humid air that may be developing under the heat dome, which is what brings all of the extreme heat effects that we can experience in that, all that hot, humid air is meeting a boundary with cooler air that's outside of the heat dome. And so that mixture can also help with the volatility that supports the development of thunderstorms.
So, you know, when we see something like, and actually there's something right now building over places like Texas and New Mexico and Oklahoma, where we get this, the heat dome, the high pressure that the weather in that place, in a place like Dallas, Fort Worth, can and does essentially affect, or it can be, I guess, a result of the same drivers that are causing the weather in a place like Chicago or Champaign.
Yeah. One thing that's a complicated thing about this is that when we develop these different patterns in the atmosphere, it's essentially the atmosphere locking into a particular wave pattern. And so it's almost like if you had a standing wave where you have the big northward bending of the jet stream, creating this ridging pattern that leads to these high pressure systems, and then that diving of the jet stream now more down towards the equator into what we call a trough. And that's typically where you see a lot of your low pressure systems. Well, sometimes, and you may have heard some of these terms like an omega block or some of these other very stationary patterns, sometimes that wave pattern can just lock itself in place for long periods of time. And that's where we can get into these patterns where in the ridging part, you may have these heat waves where you get all these extreme heat. But then in the troughy part, or the, you know, the low pressure side of that, you'll get repeated development of thunderstorms that can go on for days or weeks. And so you might have flooding or other kinds of storm related impacts on that side of that standing wave.
So, you know, coming back to this year here in central Illinois, you know, some parts of this region received a ton of rain. You know, Tazewell County over near Peoria got almost 12 inches of rain in some places. Parts of Fulton County, McLean County, where Bloomington normally is, got over 10 inches. Here in Champaign, Champaign County, at least parts of the northern part of the county got nearly 9 inches of rain in about 3 days. So when we think about flooding in central Illinois, it's a little bit different than flooding in Chicagoland, where it's primarily urban, suburban, rural. In this case, we have a pretty big mix of urban area. You think about Champaign-Urbana, Bloomington-Normal, Decatur, Peoria, as well as large expanses of rural area, mostly cropland area in between. How is flooding experienced differently between the urban areas, even smaller urban areas, and sort of rural areas?
This is a really complex question to answer, but I think
take it where you will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but they all boil down to a few things. One, the nature of the ground that's going to be, you know, hit by the water. So in urban areas, we have a lot of what are known as impermeable surfaces, things that water does not flow through. So asphalt, concrete, metal, things like this. And so if the water cannot absorb into the ground, then it has to run off somewhere. And this is where, so in, you know, in cities, you can get a lot of just kind of more flash floody type of response, because all this water is coming out of the sky and the only place it can go is into sewer systems, typically, because there's not a lot of permeable surfaces a lot of the time for the water to soak into the ground directly. On top of that, even when there is open soil like parkland or something like this, a lot of that soil is known as being disturbed. And so it might have pieces of construction equipment, pieces of previous buildings, all sorts of different stuff. And so how water percolates through that kind of surface is different than, say, nice, rich, you know, farmland soil, right? And so the rate in which that water infiltrates through even disturbed soil is just different. And so what happens in an urban environment is then all that water is directed into whatever stormwater infrastructure that you have. It can be a below ground sewer system. It can be into, you know, open air ditches, things like this. It could be, especially in very high volume events, it can be into you know, catchment basins and things like this. And so when you see the response in urban environments, it's typically, well, how quickly does that management system get overwhelmed? And that really depends on the engineering of that particular system. Now, here in central Illinois and other areas where we're kind of at this urban-rural interface, we typically have a big mix of these different types of systems. Within the city, maybe you have below-ground sewer systems, and then you might have a mixture of more surface-based systems on the edges as you transition out into the rural parts. Now, of course, in the rural parts, then you have a lot of open fields. And that's where also things get kind of interesting, because, again, it gets into the nature of the soil, gets into the nature of what kind of drainage technology has been installed into the fields, and also what technology may be being used at the edges of fields to prevent rapid runoff. So there is more investigation now into green stormwater infrastructure techniques for farms in terms of creating bioswales and other different types of catchment technology, so that you can filter maybe topsoil and other things that might try to run off into our rivers and our streams and canals and things like that, both so that you can reduce the loss of that. So there's a lot of different ways that this can be handled, but one of the biggest difference between the two is that, yes, in rural areas, you do have more area typically open for water to infiltrate directly into the ground, but that can be mitigated based on how, again, the disturbance of the soil, the type of soil, all those other kinds of things.
So if you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Trent Ford, the state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. Today, we're talking about widespread flooding in Illinois with Deanna Hentz, associate professor in Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Going back to the events that happened in mid-August, you know, I mentioned that portions of Fulton, Tazewell counties had a lot of rain, in some cases up to 12 inches of rain in a three-day period of time. So the National Weather Service estimated that event in some of those areas of the state was what they call a 1 in 1,000 year rainfall event. And of course, it made roads unpassable, small stream for flooding, that sort of thing. But 1 in 1,000 year event. Can you describe what is a 1 in 1,000 year rainfall event? Sort of scientifically and colloquially, but then also how do we understand and communicate the risk of something like heavy rainfall for engineering, design, for planning, for all the above?
Yeah, it's interesting. I personally tend to think that this descriptor of 1 in 1,000 years is perhaps not the best for communicating risk sometimes. And that's because frequently it gives the impression that you have a risk of this type of event happening once every 1,000 years. So once you've had your event, okay, well, you're good for 1,000 years, you're done, right? But that's not what this term actually means. So what this number means, that it is a 1 in the numerator divided by the denominator, in this case is 1,000, chance within a particular year of this event happening. So 1 divided by 1,000 is 0.001, or another way of saying it, a 0.1% chance in any given year that this can happen. So the idea is that, yes, it is a unlikely event, a very unlikely event in this case, but that there is still a small probability that this particular type of event can happen in any given year. It's just a very small probability based on the climatology of how the frequency of these kinds of events have happened in the past.
So let's put this big event in the context of long-term change. And we were just talking about risk. So we get the question, is this the new normal? Should we expect more of this? Do we need to prepare for more of this? So simply, is heavy rainfall becoming more common in Illinois? And if so, why?
Well, the why is a fantastic question. but the short answer is yes. Heavy rainfall is becoming more common within Illinois and across the Midwest. Exactly what that profile in the time of year, a little bit depends on where exactly within the state and where exactly in the region that you're seeing these changes. But especially in actually our cooler season months is where we're seeing some of this greater propensity for these heavy rainfall events. The summertime is a really interesting one, in that the overall signal for that is more diffuse. But one thing that's really interesting about the summer in particular is that there seems to be this increasing tendency towards a more boom and bust type dynamic when you're seeing, when we're talking about precipitation, and that we're also having a bit more of a tendency to have these prolonged periods with significantly reduced or no rainfall. But then when it comes in these deluges, right? And so so this is the kind of dynamic that we're about more dealing with now, is that when we're talking about the systems being overwhelmed, the kind of precipitation that can overwhelm our systems, we are seeing more of a propensity for that. And so that question of whether our infrastructure can truly handle this is an increasing concern. Now, as to the why, that answer is complex, as everything is when we're talking about climate change. One contributor is that the capacity for the atmosphere to hold water is going up with increasing temperature. And we have, you know, we are both blessed and sometimes a bit tormented by the fact that we have this beautiful plume of moist air that tends to come up from the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, through this low-level jet that feeds us a lot of the moisture that gives us a lot of our rainfall. So we're great, very grateful for it, except for maybe in the summer when we're dying from humidity. But we have that increasing tendency towards increased water capacity. We have the ingredients that can make some of these storms. Again, the climate signal around that is complex depending on the kind of phenomena that you're talking about. But also one concern is the, again, this tendency towards these locking patterns, the stationarity of some of these heat domes, some of these more trophy patterns that can lead to this propensity for these types of systems to kick off. And so all of those pieces are evolving, and they each evolve in somewhat different ways, but they are combining to have this increased tendency towards heavy precipitation in our region.
So if you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Trent Ford, the state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. Today, we're talking about widespread flooding in Illinois with Deanna Hentz, associate professor in Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Do we expect that heavy rainfall risk drops off after summer? We don't have to worry about it so much in the fall or winter. And when we look forward to a time like the winter and the winter season outlook and that sort of thing, I mean, how hard is it to predict the risk of flooding in Illinois, you know, that kind of like that far out?
Well, the interesting thing about this is that as we move into the colder months, it's really going to be the types of phenomena that bring the heavy precipitation are likely to change. So during the summer, we have our intense thunderstorms, our, you know, organized thunderstorm systems that we call mesoscale convective systems. Those are a lot of the kinds of phenomena that drive our heavy rainfall in the summer. As we move into the fall and winter, we're going to see more things that are going to be those lines of thunderstorms that form, let's say, along cold fronts and things like this, or these big shields of precipitation that can form ahead of warm fronts. You know, so a lot more heavy rainfall associated with mid-latitude cyclone activity and things like this. So when it comes to the prediction of the likelihood of flooding, that comes down to two parts. One is our ability to predict the responsible phenomena, and that's going to be related to, again, those movements of the jet stream, our ability to predict the development of those cyclones, our ability to accurately predict how well, how fast they are going to move. These kinds of things, just much like now, are predictable to a certain degree, but especially when we're talking about those kind of blocking patterns and those other stationary kind of situations where maybe you're going to fire off multiple cyclones in the same spot and they go over the Illinois over and over and over, those are the kind of situations that sometimes those are easier to predict and sometimes they're harder to predict depending on the situation. The second half of that question, though, is you have the precipitation, the responsible phenomena, but then you have the soil conditions and knowing those. And so how the land is going to respond to that, how the runoff, you know, is going to respond to that is a very complementary but also difficult type of forecasting, right? Because that requires having really good knowledge of the state of the soil, the state of your different your rivers, your reservoirs, things like that, and its capacity to receive that water. And so this is where the hydrology of the situation meets the meteorology to try to predict how a particular region is going to respond to that input from the atmosphere.
So last question here then. This year, a lot of the focus has been on severe weather in the form of tornadoes, and reasonably so. It's been a wild year there. It seems like, this could be my bias, not being a severe weather researcher, but it seems like there's a lot more focus and interest around tornadoes and thunderstorms, relatively less around flash flooding. And a couple of years ago, I saw this like random statistic when X was Twitter and better. There was like, I think the National Weather Service had its tornado Twitter page of spitting out tornado warnings. I think it was like 1,000 times more followers of that one than flash flooding. But like you mentioned earlier, flooding accounts for many more deaths and a lot more damage each year than tornadoes. So why should folks make the case? Why do folks need to pay attention to flash flooding risks? You know, when we get those big bursts on our phone to say tornado warning, everybody's like, okay, I got to take this seriously. But when it says flash flood warning, it's okay, back to work, you know. What do we need to be paying attention to? Why is it important to pay attention to and to account for and be careful around the risk of flash flood?
Yeah, it's interesting. And then so this is a bias, I say, that's as much sometimes as our fault as everyone else's. And by us, I mean, you know, meteorologists, right? And I get it. I study extreme cloud systems. I study, you know, I actually don't focus on tornadoes as much as some of our other colleagues, but I study hurricanes. I study different kinds of storm systems. And so I get it that they're big, they're beautiful, they make a lot of noise. They can be extremely impressive. So I get the fascination from the bottom of my soul. However, the only thing that kills more than flooding is heat. And so the reason to pay attention to it is right there. You know, the National Weather Service has for years been trying to convince people to turn around, don't drown, like to take flooding seriously, because it only takes a few inches of water to lift an entire car. And that's when you get dramatic images of people having to be rescued by first responders when they're, by boat, right? So it's important to pay attention to flash flooding risks. It's, you know, exactly because of this. It is life-threatening, and it can really catch you off guard. It can happen within minutes. I grew up in Texas, where I very much learned you do not camp, for example, in an old stream bed, exactly because the chances that a thunderstorm could come along and, you know, and flood your tent were just so high during the warm weather season. So I think it does say a lot that for some reason this reality doesn't impress itself on us as much as the more kind of finger of God, you know, type of appeal of a tornado, right? And maybe also there's something to be said that because flash flooding is something that happens all the time, that much like how driving your car is one of the most risky things you do on a daily basis, it becomes really normalized that, well, yeah, it's a risk, it's a thing, but I do deal with it, you know, very frequently, so it becomes way less of a big deal in your brain. So I think paying attention, especially if you live in a place that's low-lying, close to a creek, a river, things like that. But even if you don't and you're going to be regularly commuting in a place that you know has flooding risks, paying attention to that, paying attention to where those low spots are. If you see water in the ground, you know, over the ground or over the roadway, not just assuming, oh, I can get through it. You know, these are critical things for people to know, because the number of people that die from misjudging how deep water can be, it's a tragedy every single time it happens. And we do need to pay more attention to it.
Yeah, the National Weather Service says always turn around, don't drown. Right. And that's something that is not just a catchy phrase, but a reality. Well, hey, thanks for joining us, Deanne. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was fun.
So we've been talking with Dr. Deanna Hentz, associate professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. Thanks for joining us on Weather Realness. Do you have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.